This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:06 in the evening, and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. Today, we're talking about the case of Panir Selvam Pranthaman. He's a Malaysian that's been sentenced to death in Singapore for drug trafficking charges. Panir, his family and his lawyers have all said that the sentence is unjustifiable as he was a drug mule who got tricked into trafficking drugs into Singapore. There have been many attempts to save his life through legal and diplomatic channels, but none have succeeded so far.
Panir's life is still in the balance after a last-minute decision from Singaporean courts in May to postpone his execution that was set that very same month. Now in the studio with us is his sister, Angelia Selvam Pranthaman, as well as human rights lawyer Anne Surendran, who is legal advisor of Lawyers for Liberty. The two have been working on this case tirelessly. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Sure, thanks.
So I guess let's just begin with this, right? And talk to us about how Panir is doing currently. How is he?
Hi, first I would like to thank BFM for giving me this opportunity. Today is Panir's 32nd birthday, so I want to wish him happy birthday. Panir is currently living in a borrowed time. He's a very changed person now. He's educating himself with the limited time that he has and always write us letter and draw us a birthday card from the prison. He has also access to television inside the prison and have been following up all the latest news on Malaysia and Singapore. He also always talked to me about Bitcoin, investment, AI technology and etc. Recently have requested for many reading materials, and one of it was leadership book written by our Tun Dr. Mahathir. Current state of Panir, he become a man of faith. His burning desire to help others still remain. He helped other inmates to write letter to their family and share legal terms and words on how to write an appeal. Furthermore, he also got a chance to share about his love of Jesus to willing listener and pray for them.
And with that said about how Panir is doing, how is your family, Angelia?
Living each day thinking my brother would be put to death at any moment is a torture. We have lost all the happiness, and it has been 5 years that we are struggling over this situation. We have bear all the travel expenses and the lawyer's fees before this. It cost all we have. We even sell some properties like lorry and bike to finance it. From a humble middle class earning family, we become poor and little broke. My parents are still in shock and trauma of this incident. My mother, she has lost down a lot of weight. She's going through the hardest feeling a mom could go through. Knowing something is going to take her son's life for the silly mistake that he did. She appears to be skinny and always break down in tears. Whenever she realized that Panir will never get a chance to eat his favorite mutton curry cooked by her. I have resigned my job because I can't focus at my workplace. My brother Joshua is currently doing his master, but I have deferred the studies to help our family. This is Panir's first run-up with law.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And Surendran, I think earlier we kind of gave a brief outline of the situation that as it is. But could you perhaps tell us a little bit more about this and at what point you got involved?
Sure, certainly, Lynn. You know, he was convicted, Panir was convicted for allegedly having brought in about 50 grams of diamorphine. The street term is heroin. And throughout the trial, he always said that he did not know what it is that he had brought up. He thought it was some sort of a controlled medicine. And what's significant is that even the court, when it sentenced him, did agree that he was just a courier or a mule. In short, even the court acknowledged that we're not dealing with some sort of a drug trafficker, you know. And I got involved in this case because I've been working for over a decade with the Malaysians who are duped or tricked into being drug mules in Singapore and other places. And in short, I'm the person they come to when all hope is lost. Because most of these guys, they're already on death row. They've lost all their appeals. And yet, there is a lack of fairness in the system that brought them to the foot of the gallows, if you may put it that way. So that's what we've been trying. The reason we're fighting for them is that they have not been treated fairly, and they do not deserve the death that that they're facing now.
So whenever I guess we do talk about instances like these, about drug mules, sometimes the comment that does come through is that how could anyone fall for something like that? I guess there is that lack of understanding that maybe just about anyone can fall for a scheme or a scam like that.
Yes. In fact, I think, people can't be blamed for having been duped. People can't be blamed for making a mistake. And people can't be blamed for being foolish, in fact. That's the truth of the matter. Different people are different. It's not easy to fool some people, but it can be easy to fool others or dupe others. So they make mistakes. And worse than that, there are also some people who are seriously mentally challenged. Like another case, Nagendran, he's got a borderline IQ of, 69. And he's also facing execution. He's also on death row. So it's not so much about why people fall for it, but what was their state of knowledge when it happened? Did they really know it was drugs? What were the circumstances around them having agreed to do something like this? I mean, who puts their head into the noose willingly? You know, so all these things are factors that need to be taken into account. And the inflexible way Singapore is going about now doesn't take into account, you know, the reality about what you know, makes these boys fall into the trap.
Mm-hmm. Anjali, I mean, when you first heard about what had happened, what was your reaction? I mean, were you aware that anything like this had been happening? Were you aware of, you know, any sort of communications that Pania had been having about doing something like this?
To be honest, I am not aware of this issue at all, and about Panir's life activity. Yes, we are not aware.
We're speaking today about the case of Pane Selvam Pranthaman, a Malaysian who's been sentenced to death in Singapore. And with us, of course, is Ann Surendran, legal advisor to Lawyers for Liberty, and Angelia Selvam Pranthaman, Pane Selvam's sister. If you have any thoughts or questions, you can send them through. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back to continue this conversation. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 6:15 in the evening with Lynn and Kelvin, and our guests live in the studio today, Angelia Selvam Pranthaman and Ann Surendran. They're both here to talk about the case of Pane Selvam Pranthaman, who has, of course, been sentenced to death in Singapore for drug trafficking charges. So we've somewhat established, I think, the circumstances that led to the situation that we're in. And Surendran, Pane managed to get a stay of execution in May, a day before he was due to face the gallows. It's been reported as a rare decision from the courts. Can you talk to us about what led to this happening and why it's considered rare?
Yeah, it was certainly unusual. I'll give you an example. When we were doing Prabhakaran's case in 2017, we had also filed a last-minute stay of execution on the eve of the execution, and we didn't succeed. And he was executed the next morning. And that was devastating for, I think, all who were involved, the family members, even the lawyers. You know, lawyers are human. Contrary to popular belief, lawyers are human. So it was terrible. But so in Singapore is quite firm in dealing with drug matters, and I think most of, even some of the Singaporean lawyers had given up that something could be done to stop the execution. So, but luckily, because of the flaws in the clemency process in Panir's case, I think the Singapore court felt strongly that it had no choice but to allow the stay of execution. And I think also there was a lot of publicity also here in Malaysia, where the flaws and the illegalities in the clemency rejection had already been pointed out. It was a matter of public discussion. And I think all of this led to the stay of execution being granted. Suffice it to say, we were very relieved because it is a very traumatic experience actually for all involved, especially the family waiting in the court gallery to find out whether the judges allow the stay or whether their loved one hangs the next morning. So we are thankful that we got that order. Yep.
And Julia, I can't imagine how difficult that experience must have been for you and your family. If you don't mind, could you share what it was like on the days leading up to that stay of execution and also to that day itself?
Okay. That was the worst 1 week in my life. Starting from 17 May, when we got the clemency rejection letter and the execution letter with error on it, our whole family was terrified and it seems to be the end of the world for us. We quickly drop whatever we are doing and gather at my sister's place in Kuala Lumpur to rush to Singapore that night. We feel dark and lost. The first day of the visit, Mr. Yang, the person who signed the DHL postage, did not realize that the date was postdated. The letter was postdated. The first thing that he talked about is funeral arrangement, whether we want to bring back the body or hand over to the management. And they also requesting for 2 pairs of clothes for the photo shoot and 2 family members to collect the body after the hanging. And was requesting my sister to sign the form, which my sister did not. Then we start asking, my sister told Mr. Yang that the letter was postdated and he got very surprised to know about it, and he said that he need 1 working day to get back to us on that. Changi Prison was trying their level best to stop all our effort to save our brother by wasting our time with the reason of 1 working day. They didn't let Pani's lawyer, Mr. N. Surendran, to see him until the very end and failed to provide us a reason. Changi Prison have also lied to us. The person in charge for the visit, Mr. Kohanesh, have lied to us that the approval for the lawyer to meet my brother will come from the Minister of Home Affairs. And when they realized that we know that they are lying, and they changed the topic by saying it comes from other party. To be honest, and to confirm this, I have the conversation recording between the Changi Prison Management and our family, which is not released in any media yet. They also avoid our request for the commission of audit to authorize the affidavits by saying there's no room left. My sister lost all the patient and we have lost everything. We tried to argue with them and started to throw the papers because we have no choice. And when we start to stir up some argument there, they finally let the commission of audit to come and see my brother and authorize the affidavits. And from that Friday to Thursday, that was the worst week. That there's so much trouble, and we are trying so hard to save our brother, and that much the Changi Prison Management is trying to avoid it.
Surendran, in the time that you've been working, with others who are in a similar situation, is this something that you've observed often? I mean, because this, it sounds, I cannot imagine. I mean, it's truly a very difficult experience to go through. Is this sort of back and forth and administrative kind of communication something that you see often?
Yes, I've seen it before, because it seems like there's an attempt to kind of not facilitate the attempts by the prisoner and his family to get last-minute reprieves or file last-minute motion. Look, Singapore, as a general rule, the whole system tries to discourage any last-minute attempts. Just about a year or two ago, in the case of another Malaysian, Ko Jia Bing, the lawyers were severely rebuked by the judiciary, by the court system themselves, because they brought multiple applications in order to try and block the hanging. That was also a Malaysian citizen. And they were so angry about that, that when they finally dismissed the stay applications, They took him away and they hanged him that afternoon itself, which was unprecedented. So I'm sorry to say that there seems to be a certain level of vindictiveness, a certain level of unfairness in the way the death penalty system or is being administered by Singapore. Particularly, I'm sorry to say, in relation to Malaysians. We have seen this same attitude appearing again and again and again. And this was confirmed by statements made by the Singapore Home Minister, Mr. Shanmugam, just in May. So yes, it is an uphill task for the family, because they also don't allow Malaysian lawyers like ourselves to meet the Malaysian death row prisoners in Changi Prison, which is unacceptable because other nations are allowed. Australian lawyers are allowed to meet their clients, but we are not. So why the double standards? Why this treatment for Malaysian prisoners and Malaysian families is the question that we want to ask Singapore.
And in line with that, you've also said that Pioneer has been offering valuable information to Singaporean authorities on drug syndicates. What has their response been to the information that has been provided?
You see, the information was provided by both Pioneer and his family did their own detective work to get more information about the people who duped him into going in there. And all of this was handed over to the Singaporean narcotics authorities. They've taken it. And but we've not had any feedback from them since then, whether that information, what they did with the information. And most importantly, the idea of that information is so that they can give a certificate of assistance to Pioneer. That certificate will entitle him to a commutation from capital punishment or execution to life imprisonment. But despite all the information that was given, they have until today refused to give that certificate. That certificate means the difference between life and death. Why won't they give it?
So I'm curious about that impenetrability that you seem to be talking about, right? This idea that, why? That notion of why is it this way? Do you have any understanding of why that might be the case? I mean, has there been any communication to you about why it is? Or is it just something that continues to be an issue and is continuing to go unexplained in that sense?
Well, it seems like the Singaporean state, the judicial system, the legal system are all bent on administering the laws against drug in such a way that it leads to unfairness. They're so inflexible that they seem to be expecting a high rate of convictions, and they seem also bent on making sure that those who are convicted are eventually executed. That is why we've seen these problems with the clemency process also. Even the clemencies are all being rejected en masse, as if they're not even being considered. So in their zeal to implement the law against drug trafficking, they seem to have completely lost sight of fairness, of justice, of even compassion or mercy. That's where we are. That's the position where we are at present.
Could you go into a bit more detail about the grounds of clemency for clemency in Singapore? What are they?
You see, clemency is a legal right. Many people think that it's something that you are. It's up to the up to the president or the governor or whoever to just give or not give. Actually, no. Under the law, whether in Malaysia or in Singapore, clemency is a legal right. That means when the prisoner has exhausted all his rights, he is entitled, as a matter of constitutional law, to have his clemency petition considered by the president. But we don't really know what are the factors that are taken into account by the president and the cabinet in deciding whether to give clemency or not. But our concern is that the recent mass rejections of clemencies, including 4 or 5 Malaysians are involved there, means that Singapore seems to have made a policy decision not to entertain clemency petitions. Now, that's unlawful. That's illegal. You've got to give every prisoner the chance to have his circumstances considered. And so that the clemency can be given. So that's where our concern is. If they are doing some sort of a robotic failure to consider the real grounds in whether to grant clemency or not, then that's a very serious situation for the rest of the Malaysians who are still on death row and many more who are in the process of trial in Singapore.
Do we know of any sort of cooperation at the moment between Malaysia and Singapore to actually look at drug kingpins as opposed to the bulk of what we're who we're discussing, who have been drug mules and unwitting drug mules at that. Do we know of any cooperation or attempts to catch people who are higher up in this chain?
Well, I'm not privy to the details of what's happening between the police forces of both the country. But there's no doubt that there is long-standing cooperation between the enforcement officials from both sides. And that is exactly what they should be doing. They should be bringing their forces together, and they should be focusing on getting the drug traffickers who are duping or using drug mules, instead of going and executing drug mules from poor backgrounds, mainly decent boys, actually, who get duped into this business. They should be, you know, increasing enforcement and getting the drug kingpins. Now the drug kingpins are laughing while the poor drug mules are executed and their families suffer. Now, is that justice?
We're speaking today with N. Surendran, legal advisor of Lawyers for Liberty, as well as Angelia Selvam Pranthaman, who is the sister of Pani Selvam Pranthaman, a Malaysian who has been sentenced to death in Singapore for drug trafficking charges. We're talking about the circumstances surrounding the case. And up next, we'll be getting into a little bit more detail about the recent headlines that have been made. If you have any questions, if you have any thoughts that you'd like to share, you can call 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Banish fraudulent manoeuvres. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:36. Good evening. You're listening to Lynn and Kelvin. We're talking today about the case of Pani Selvam Pranthaman, a Malaysian who has been sentenced to death in Singapore for drug trafficking charges. And in the studio with us is Pani's sister, Angelia Selvam Pranthaman, as well as N. Surendran, legal advisor for Lawyers for Liberty. And we've just been covering all the ground leading up to where we are. Angelia, perhaps you can talk to us a little bit about the work that your family and that everybody's been doing to try and save Pani.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Panir's application to Singapore Court of Appeal have been dismissed on February 2018, and his death sentence stand. My sister Shankri was refusing to give up, and she came up with the idea of tracking down the information of Anand, the drug lord and the mastermind behind the scene, to enable Panir to provide the substantive assistance to Singapore anti-drug authorities. We obtained some clues from my brother, who only had limited information regarding Anand, who he only knew for 3 weeks. First one was his nickname as Satu Hati Boy, description of his appearance, and also the place he used to stay in Johor Bahru, and his car
license plate?
Like the model.
His car model, and he couldn't remember the number plate. The first information that we gathered for 2 weeks ended up to be a failure because it was a wrong person that we identified. And with my parents and cousins living in JB, my sister and my father walked in the streets of JB for hours until we happened to meet a stranger at Perling Flats. This stranger have some information about Anand and his car plate number, his car number plate. With that, Shankari managed to obtain Anand's actual name, actual full name, and also identity card number, and discover that he has a record of drug cases and his wanted list in Malaysia. My sister also managed to find Anand's photo from his Facebook account and obtain information about Anand's close friend. The whole gang was using a fake name and was similarly involved in recruiting people for the cross-border drug trafficking. We appoint a lawyer to help arrange a meeting between Singapore Central Narcotic and Panir for him to share the information on the three individuals involved in the drug activity, which my sister compiled in a file for him and passed to them. It approximately took us whole 2 months to compile this information.
And that is just so much work, so much time, and I guess just a lot of it being invested into this effort. And in line with that, I guess it must put quite a strain on what you have and your resources. We do also have a WhatsApp message here asking, is there any way we can help? Is there something we can donate to perhaps to help ease the family financial burden? What can the public do for you guys?
Yes. We are not asking for any donation. We just want the public support to support my brother. That we are asking for the certificate to spare his life. We want the public to visit safemoney.info website, and we have our petition there, online petition for the public to sign. So I'm humbly requesting the public to sign the petition, and which is addressed to President Halimah Yaacob.
And again, I think just to say that website is safepaneer.info, and everything, all the details will be up there. Surendran, there is a question for you. I'd like to know how we treat drug mules here in Malaysia, since drug trafficking is also a strict liability offence here. Are we any different from Singapore? And that message came from Koo.
Right. We weren't any different from Singapore, but now we're changing. Because there is a moratorium in Malaysia. No one's being executed, particularly not drug mules. And there is assurance from the government that the mandatory death penalty is going to be abolished. There is even talk that the death penalty in its entirety may be abolished. So the attitude in Malaysia towards drug mules has changed vastly. And I think even under the previous government, amendments were brought to the Dangerous Drugs Act in recognition that drug mules cannot be treated as if they are Pablo Escobar or El Chapo Guzman. They're not. They're just low-level people who ought not to be executed or treated in this manner. Yes.
We also have a question here from Chris, who says, clemency is not a right. Lord Diplock's dictum in an old English case states that mercy is not the subject of legal rights. It begins where legal rights end. You may have rights to the process, but not over how the decision is made. See Sim Kee Chon's case. It's not subject to judicial review or any administrative law process.
Well, the law has changed. Since Sim Kee Chon, since what Lord Diplock said, the law has changed. Now it is recognized that the right to have your clemency considered is a legal and constitutional right. And that's where our complaint is now. We are saying that the Singapore government, its cabinet, has made a clear decision to dismiss these petitions without considering the individual facts of every prisoner's case. And that's why you had this recent mass rejection of clemency petitions, including 13 at one shot, including four of those Malaysians. And that's where our complaint is. And interestingly enough and ironically, the law in Singapore when it comes to clemency petitions has gone even way ahead beyond Malaysia. Under the Yong Wee Kong decision, the right of the prisoner to challenge the rejection of the clemency has been acknowledged. So that's our concern. If Singapore is, which is quite obvious looking at it objectively, that they've made a decision to reject clemency petitions in toto, then they're acting illegally. Then our citizens who are in trouble in Singapore need help because they are being treated in an illegal, unlawful manner by the state of Singapore.
We're talking about the case and situation surrounding Paneeselvam Pranthaman. If you have questions, you can call 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, considering, Angelia, earlier you mentioned that you would like to see more, you would like to see public support, you know, for your brother. You'd like to see conversations around that. Surendran, do you think local conversations about the death penalty have reached the ears of Singaporean lawmakers? You know, will it have any impact?
Well, definitely it's reached their ears because the debate about the situation of the Malaysians and death penalty, I think, has become regional news, especially over the past several weeks. And certainly since May, when Paneeselvam's case became a high-profile matter. But what impact it will have on the Singapore lawmakers is another matter, because the Singapore lawmakers are quite monolithic. There's very little room for dissent even among Singapore lawmakers themselves. Unlike in Malaysia, where you see Pakatan Harapan MPs even criticizing the government, you won't see that happen under the PAP government there. And the bigger question is whether or not this has any impact on the attitude of the government and the cabinet towards the implementation of the death penalty. And I hope they come to realize that this is damaging Singapore's reputation. If they continue down this path, mass rejections, mass execution, as they seem, as they have threatened to do, it is only going to be to the detriment of Singapore. And they really have to, we appeal to them, really have to take a step back and assess where they're going with this.
Angelia, what do you want people to understand about the death penalty decision, especially in light of how it's impacted you and your family?
Yes, I want people to understand that in this world, two things that we cannot get back. One is time and one is life. My brother have almost lost this both. Death penalty is cruel and it's irreversible act. Recently, with the support of Buddhist Association and other NGO parties, and with Mr. Shurindan also, we have submitted a memorandum to High Commissioner of Singapore and calling their life to be spared. We are asking the people and the government to look into this matter. This is not a joke for them to ignore. This is urgent. It's a matter of life and death. Some bad situation would have forced them into this trap. They all are very different person now. And the Death Row Inmates will be very grateful to everyone, including the government of Singapore, if they were given a second chance. They are just a drug mule. Singapore can't stop drug crime by hanging these poor Malaysians, whereas the drug lords are still freely recruiting people outside for the same trap. Memorandum of death penalty is not an ordinary petition to live at the guardhouse. This is something important. It's dealing with life of people.
We're speaking today with Angelia Selvanprantaman and N. Surendran. We're talking about the case of Pane Selvanprantaman, a Malaysian who's been sentenced to death in Singapore. If you have any questions, if you have any thoughts, send them through. Call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:47 in the evening. You're with Lynn and Kelvin. We're talking today about the case of Pane Selvanprantaman, a Malaysian who has been sentenced to death in Singapore for drug trafficking charges. And in the studio with us, Angelia Selvanprantaman, Pane's sister, as well as N. Surendran, legal advisor for Lawyers for Liberty. Again, if you have questions or thoughts, that number to call is 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Surendran, earlier you made reference to Singapore's Law and Home Affairs Minister, K. Shanmugam, who said that the Pakatan government has made several requests to stop the execution of Malaysians in Singapore. He went on to say Singapore can't make exceptions for Malaysians sentenced to death. It will undermine the rule of law. What are your thoughts on the statement?
You see, we never asked for exceptions to be made specifically for Malaysians. We raised concerns because of the unfairness of the process in relation to the Malaysians. For example, the way the clemency was not being decided properly and independently by the president, the way there seemed to be a pre-decision to reject all clemency petitions. In short, we were worried about the illegalities and improper procedures that were being carried out by Singapore in dealing with our citizens. It was not in any way supposed to suggest that at no point did we say our citizens require special treatment or anything like that. So I think that is where Mr. Shanmugam, the Home Minister, went wrong. Our concern is that we've got our citizens facing the ultimate punishment, which is death by hanging. And of course, whether we agree with the death penalty or not, we recognize that they have a right to implement their laws. But if they're going to do that, then they have to implement it properly. They must carry it out lawfully and according to the procedure laid down by law. We're saying they're not. When they decided to reject all the clemency petition, it's quite clear they have thrown the law out the window and that they are targeting Malaysians for reasons best known to themselves. And Mr. Shanmugam clearly said that in his statements in May. He said that all these Malaysians are coming here and we can't be letting the Malaysians off. His words were letting the Malaysians off. Does that mean you're not going to give them clemency? You're not going to consider the Malaysians clemency and you're going to hang them all? That's our grave concern here.
And I guess your statement and in general has ruffled quite a bit of quite some feathers, right? Singapore's Attorney General's Chambers said that you made scandalous allegations against Singapore and its legal system. Eric Paulson, the Malaysian representative to the ASEAN Intergovernmental Commission on Human Rights, said that this complaint was a veiled threat of prosecution against you. Do you feel threatened?
Well, it's really not about what happens to me or what they've threatened against me. This is about the right to legal advice and legal recourse for the Malaysians who are on death row. And it is a fundamental right. It is recognized under international legal norms that every person, and particularly someone facing the death sentence, should have full access to lawyers of his choice. In this case, I was a Malaysian instructing solicitor. I instructed the Singapore lawyers to act for him in this matter, and to have and by threatening to prosecute me or to take action against me, they are in effect preventing me from giving legal advice and assistance to Paninselvam and others, as I'm acting for others, other Malaysians on death row also. Now, that is unacceptable. That is, in doing so, Singapore is breaching customary international law. Singapore is breaching their own laws, in fact. And that is why there was a great deal of concern over the statements made by the Singapore Attorney General's Chambers. And we've got to remember that Singapore's done this kind of thing before. 10 years ago, they charged the British author Alan Shadrick again for having made statements critical relating to the capital punishment system in Singapore. He was convicted, he was jailed. So they've got a track record of doing stuff like this. But in this case, to interfere with a lawyer acting for clients is really going beyond the pale.
We have a question here from Jason who wants to know, can international NGOs such as the UN help?
Everyone can help. Yes, international pressure helps. Regional pressure helps. But as we all know, the Singapore can be quite, well, there's no other word for it, obstinate in carrying out executions. And it is, on previous occasions, widespread appeals, international appeals, and appeals from government have failed to stop hangings. This is true, but we are hoping that attitudes change. The backlash and the negativity that is being generated by Singapore's rush to execution surely should make them realize that this is not the way to proceed. So we do hope that more people speak up, both from Malaysia and from regional and international organizations, so that Singapore realizes that this is wrong and it's time for them to at least reconsider the way they're going about this.
And Angelia, what are your hopes here for the situation?
My hopes were, I hope that Panir will receive the Certificate of Substantive Assistance for the cooperation that he gave. This certificate could save his life from being executed. I hope that Panir is hoping for the same thing as well. And he will be very grateful to everybody, including the people, the public and the government, if he could get that certificate and spare his life.
We have a message here from Iz who says, my sympathy goes to you and your family. As for Panir, I believe he is innocent and I hope he's released soon. May God bless him. Thank you both so much for joining us today. I think that earlier we mentioned it, but I do just want to mention it again. If you want to support the cause, that is on savepanir.info. That is the website that you can hit to. And again, Angelia, Surendran, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you both have any final messages that you'd like to share?
Earlier, I forgot to say that we also have a Facebook page to Save Panir. So I would like the public to know about it. So we have this online petition to sign there. And I'm requesting humbly for the public to sign the online petition. Thank you.
Well, I hope that Singapore changes their position. And I hope they see it past whatever is causing them to do this, to see that mercy and compassion there is another way of doing things. I hope they're able to see that.
We've been speaking today with Angelia Selvam Pranthaman, sister of Paninselvam, as well as N. Surendran, legal advisor, Lawyers for Liberty. There is the website, savepanir.info. There is also the Facebook page, and we would encourage you guys to visit that. You've been listening today to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.